Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Fine summer day, and some of you are having an asthma attack. Today's story, I'm going to start with a four-year-old girl named Leah. Leah is 4 years old, and her bronchioles are so closed that she's on oral steroids. This is not just simply prednisone. These are large infusions of oral and liquid steroids on top of the oral steroids to keep those bronchioles open, to combat what we're seeing in the papers all the time as an ever-pressing issue in American culture. That is these asthma attacks, adult-onset asthma, child-onset asthma, all over the place, increasing at an alarming tendency, along with food allergies. Time magazine, every couple of months, an article on the overwhelming incidence of food allergies in the American population today. I want to get you guys to a deeper than pharmaceutical level understanding. I want to get you to a deeper than herbal level of understanding. And again, this is the theme of the show. If you're taking herbal supplements and they work for you, bravo. But if you constitute the many people who take herbs and don't find that the herbs are working for you, it's because there's deeper levels of understanding that would allow you to use those herbs correctly. Sometimes you just can't purchase herbs off a radio show. You've got to dig deeper into your physiology so you learn your body. You learn that your body's the temple that you knew it was, and then you can apply herbal therapy in a far more effective way. So, underlying theme to the show, giving birth to, again, the Medici Institute for Nutritional Education. We've got about 10 spaces left. We're going to go on to our third class on September 9th. If you're interested in getting to the root cause of your body, just understand it takes more education. So let's understand Leah. How do we understand a four-year-old girl brought into the world suffering for 4 years now with asthma, getting worse and worse, so serious that she's got to succumb to the use of the steroids, which have horrid side effects, and we'll get into that later. The first question you're going to ask yourself is, was she born cesarean? Now, what's the link? And again, a link you're not going to hear between asthma and C-sec births. Is it when you come down the vaginal canal in a normal vaginal birth, when you come down the vaginal canal, you're actually being inoculated by your mom's bacteria? The bacteria in the vaginal canal prime the baby's immune system to start reacting to defending itself against invaders from the outside. That's exactly the inoculation you need when months or years later, you have to defend yourself internally against bad air and food that you have a problem digesting. So first of all, we get our immune system primed in a normal childbirth. Now, when you go cesarean, you don't trigger that immune response. So you miss your early inoculation. There's the first one. The second one, if a child has birth trauma, if that child, so we're thinking about Leah now and why she'd have this, I'd be thinking, has she had birth trauma? Meaning, during the birth, was there some sort of emergency situation? Was the labor hours upon hours instead of a good 20-minute, 40-minute, 1 hour, 2 hour birth? Was Leah locked in the mom's birth canal for 5 hours, for 6 hours? Was it an emergency cesarean after that? Now, you have to understand, We've overlooked something about embryos. We've overlooked something about kids in gestation, and that is that they are living, dynamic, thinking organisms. They're understanding their process. Because your baby is not fully developed and in its third month or fourth month or fifth month, where barely it's developed, is not to say that it's not understanding its environment. And right up to the ninth month, if there's trauma of any sort, if the mom's undergoing emotional trauma, if the mom is having thoughts about the birth, thoughts about the marriage, thoughts about anything that's got an undertone of anxiety to it, the child in utero is picking all of this up. And this can have unbelievable repercussions to the development of asthma and food allergies, which we'll get into later. So right from the beginning, if that child in utero and during the birthing is coming into a world fighting something, fighting for its life against the emotion in development, fighting for its life against the physical trauma of birth, the child will shift, and I hope you're familiar with this term now, into a sympathetic dominant state, meaning its ability to relax itself, its ability to be rocked to sleep in the uterus of the mom, will be dominated and overcome by the stress response. Stress brings constriction to the bronchioles. The long-term effect of traumatic stress will bring constriction to the child's bronchioles. And so this is a pattern then that gets set up right from the beginning. So look at that birth on two levels. Are you inoculated down the vaginal canal? And secondarily, are you receiving the type of fertile, nutrifying environment as you gestate over 9 months and into your first early years? Or is the overtone of it and the undertone psychological or physical trauma? Here's a third one. A third thing you ask yourself about a child, and many children suffer from this, is the breastfeeding event. First of all, were you breastfed? Did your mom run out of milk because you were the last one? Did you accidentally bite the nipple and the mom decided not to do it anymore? Did your mom have some, you know, years ago we all had these notions that it wasn't good to breastfeed our kids. We were told by the heads in the medical associations that we didn't need to do that and we could feed our kids formula. Were you a birth that still suffered from that mentality? Or, and this is more important, was the breast milk contaminated? So let's look at breast milk. Breast milk is going to contain different chemicals in it that will stimulate the growth of the good bacteria in the intestinal tract. And that good probiotic bacteria will produce a multitude of anti-inflammatory chemicals. It will produce a multitude of chemicals across the board. Cancer and good flora in the gut go hand in hand. But we don't want to get to that. We're just going to simply talk about the anti-inflammatory effect, mediating the stress response, deeply related to the number and diversity and viability of the good flora, which is set as a seed by the mother's milk, especially the colostrum in the first 3 or 4 days. To be denied that is to be denied the probiotic system, which is to be denied top-notch anti-inflammatory immunity. To be denied birth through the vaginal canal is not to be inoculated. To be denied a easy, traumatic-free, anxiety-free birth is to put the body into the stress response. And then the topper. I'm going to tell a story about the Eskimos. The Eskimos traditionally, whether it was north of Finland, northern Canada, northern Russia, the Eskimos traditionally amongst the healthiest people the planet has ever known. No incidences of cancer, no incidences of heart disease, no incidences of tooth decay. Eating 2 pounds a day of animal protein, often raw, or fat, always saturated and often just absolutely unheated, just raw, saturated fat, no incidence of heart disease. These Eskimos traditionally gave birth to the healthiest kids the world has ever known. And today, they suffer at alarming rates, and this is the point, from neurological defects, mental retardation in different types of neurological defects. So it's not a cardiovascular problem today. It's a neurological one that these Eskimo kids are suffering from. The question is why? And the answer is the mom's breast milk is toxic. And why would a woman's breast milk be toxic? You would think that a mom is purifying her body so that the milk that the child ingests is clean, and yet it's actually the opposite. The mom uses breast milk to excrete her poison. Most people don't know that. Most people don't know that if you're down in the industrial parts, even of Los Angeles, and you analyze chemically the breast milk coming out of your average mother in Los Angeles today by toxic sites like the LA port or like the oil fields, you're going to be looking at titers, amount of chemicals that your baby cannot handle, that its immune system will trigger a response to, and that immune inflammatory, pro-inflammatory response will drive in asthma, a constriction in the bronchioles so that the child goes into potentially respiratory arrest, and that can be fatal. And if it is, be glad you have those steroids. Keep in mind, we're going to talk about steroids in a moment. Those steroids are life-saving in the acute phase. We see it all the time when firemen fight the fires and do the good deed, and they breathe in smoke that's been vaporized from burning bushes, say like poison ivy, sumac, etc. Once that smoke gets into the lungs, an inflammatory response begins and the bronchioles shut down. And that is a life-threatening moment to which we are glad that we have large dosages of liquid and oral steroids, anti-inflammatories, to open up the bronchioles. The acute use of a steroid is recommended. How could you look at that any differently? But the chronic use, the long-term use, and we'll get into this, of the chronic steroid is what we really have to take a look at. So, how do we look at Leah then? How do you look at your child? And again, Leah's 4. When Leah's 12, it'll be the same thing. When Leah's 25 or 30, she's going to be dealing with these factors. Asthma starts at birth, and this is my point. So why are we doing long-term cortisol? Why are we on inhalers? Why are we even looking for the magic herb? There's another myth, the magic herb. We can list herb after herb after herb that will help open up and dilate the bronchioles. And it's not that that's a bad thing, but it's not curative. And again, this is sort of the point. You have to understand what's behind it. If you're 10 years old, if you're 20 years old, if you're 30 years old, if you're 60 years old, and you're still on inhalers, wait till we get to the side effects. But more than that, if you're interested in cure, you got to understand root. So right there, there's a perspective for you. To understand asthma and not to look at the nature of the birth. A tremendous mistake. Number one, are you inoculated through a vaginal birth? And if you're born C-sect, you haven't been. Number two, did you suffer stress in gestation? Was the mom really glad she was having the child? And lots of moms doubt that process over 9 months. Was she really in love with the prospective father? Was the father abusive to the mother verbally and often physically? And these things do happen, and that infant in utero is picking up every single bit of this, and any kind of trauma, physical or emotional, that child shifts into its sympathetic dominant state, meaning its bronchioles close in response to its physical or psychological trauma. Was the child breastfed to begin the probiotic base? And if the child was breastfed, was the milk toxic? 4 ways that you look at asthma. Now, let's get into the steroid, the use of the steroid. Not just for asthma, but for everything, because steroids are used for everything. We use steroids on asthma. We use it on chronic sports injuries. Anytime you have a rash, you go to the doctor doesn't know really what the root cause of the rash is, and immediately you're putting on a steroid cream, or if it's worse than that, if it's linked to an autoimmune disease, you're on a steroidal anti-inflammatory. If you've got Crohn's disease, if you've got ulcerative colitis, if you've got an autoimmune problem like rheumatoid, like lupus, if you've got polymyalgia rheumatica, if you've got multiple sclerosis. We use steroids all the time. And again, the steroid, the anti-inflammatory, is a blessing in the acute life-saving stage. So if you're on your inhaler for asthma, stay on your inhaler until you can wean off it, and I'll explain why in a second. But the chronic use of the steroid poses many, many, many side effects. The first thing I want to talk about is this, the feedback loop. Remember, our adrenal glands sit on top of the kidney, and each day they make 7 to 10 milligrams of your own steroid. Each day, your adrenal glands make 7 to 10 milligrams of nature's steroid. The adrenal gland in the adrenal cortex produces a chemical, a steroidal-based chemical called cortisol. That's like cortisone. We inject cortisone into a person. We call it prednisone, synthetic cortisone. Synthetic cortisol is cortisone. We give it the trade name prednisone. We're all familiar with that process, but we make our own each day. Now, in any given moment, the brain is watching that level of cortisol circulating into the blood. And the minute the level does not meet the demand of the body, the brain sees it and through the pituitary gland sends a message to the adrenal gland, to the adrenal cortex, and says, make more cortisol. So your body is sending its own anti-inflammatory chemical every single microsecond of the day and the night. Now, this is a very, very monitored process. It's in what we call a feedback loop to the brain, which means if in any given moment there's too much, a message goes to the brain sends a message to the pituitary, and that goes out to your adrenal cortex, and you reduce the amount you make, or the opposite. You don't have enough because you have some sort of inflammatory moment, and the amount goes up as the brain sees it and signals through the pituitary to increase production. So whether you're going up or down, this is closely monitored. The problem, this is the problem with the synthetics. Any synthetic whatsoever, in this case cortisone, prednisone, all the oral infusions of this, completely and totally confuse the brain. When the brain sees an infusion of cortisone into the body that's so large, the brain figures it doesn't need to tell the adrenal gland to produce any. It's an important concept. It's called a feedback loop. When the brain sees too much cortisol, or cortisone in this case, in the blood, because you're taking it from an outside source, it shuts off its message to the adrenal gland. Now, what happens then when you begin to withdraw the amount? What happens when you go off it? What happens when you try to wean down on it? Any time you've been on it for years, you've almost cemented your adrenal gland into a decreased, depressed state. This is the reason you can't go off your cortisone, cortisols, creams, and orals, and etc. in any rapid fashion. You have to wean down because the feedback loop has to build up again. On top of which, the second thing is the side effect. The side effect of cortisone, you have to understand on the basis of what it does. First of all, the long-term effect of cortisone, and all your asthmatics are on it forever. They're told you've got to be on it forever. It's going to bleed the bone. In other words, you're going to thin out your bones. And there's a reason for that, and you want to understand it. And that is that your bone densities are controlled by two bones, two different types of cells in the bone. One is called an osteoblast, and the other is called an osteoclast. And the osteoblast builds bone, and then it's got a sister cell. It's called an osteoclast. And the osteoclast patrols the bony environment, and when it sees that the bone cell that the osteoblast made is old, the osteoclast eats the old bone. So you've got this very, very dynamic, multi-tiered system in your body where a certain cell called an osteoblast creates new bone healthy bone, flexible bone, vascular bone, pliable bone, non-infected bone. And then a sister cell called an osteoclast looks at that bone and eats the bone the minute the bone is too old. And that stimulates the osteoblast to produce new bone. And this remodeling, this is called remodeling of bone. This remodeling process keeps the bone fresh and young and flexible forever and ever and ever. What a steroid does, what a glucocorticoid does, which is more technical name for the steroid, once it gets into the system, is it stops the osteoblast from working. It kills the osteoblast. It prevents the osteoblast from working, or it kills the osteoblast even worse yet. It also stimulates the osteoclast. So side effect of prednisone, oral prednisone, liquid cortisone, whatever you call these things, is going to create severe bone loss because it kills or stops from working the bone that makes new bone, and it stimulates the osteoclast, which eats up the bone. So the rate at which the bone disappears intensifies many times. Over 10, 20, 30 years, if you've been on a steroid for 30 years because of asthma, by the time you're 60, 70, 80 years old, your bone densities are going to be paper thin. You're looking towards fractures, breakages, so on and so forth. And your doctors will tell you this. And so you may already understand. But really, there's understanding, and then there's deeper understanding. And when we get to some of the solutions for these things, you're going to see how that deeper understanding will make you more compliant. Because it's one thing to know, it's another thing to do. And the doing is, again, it's always related to how deeply you understand. I will never stop stressing this point because my experience as a doctor has been people know steroids are bad, but you talk to so many people that have been on them for one, two, three decades. Really, how bad do they understand? And this is a big driver as a doctor. You learn something in your first year, and after 10 years, you start to understand it. After 20 years, you may start to do something about it. When I consider what the journey of most medical professionals really constitutes, and I look at the public, I am positive that the way to get you to mobilize is to understand more deeply. So perhaps you understand more deeply now why if you're on a steroid, your bones will thin. The second thing is this. A steroid is going to give you diabetes. And if it doesn't give you diabetes, it's going to give you something just as bad as diabetes that's going to elude your medical professionals. And that is that a steroid is going to force your body to produce, to take its sugars, and instead of burning them, it's going to store them as glycogen. So again, when you eat a sugar, instead of that sugar going out to the cell, it'll get stored up in the liver in the reserve form of glucose called glycogen. If a steroid, and this is what these steroids do, force the conversion of all that sugar into this stored sugar, glycogen, this creates a problem for the body because it will store all the sugar you eat as fat. That's a chemical process that I'm not going to get into, but we see this all the time. The same problem we have in carbohydrate metabolism, where carbohydrates, okay, cause insulin surges, and insulin surges force the body to store everything you eat as fat, is the same way a steroid will force the conversion of the sugar into a stored sugar and create a tremendous issue with fat storage as a consequence. On top of which, that steroid causes the release of sugar into the blood, and to the extent that it causes release of sugar, it blocks the beta receptors in the cell. So you have a problem with steroids in that they're going to force more insulin into the blood because you can't absorb your sugar into the cell, on top of which it's going to make you store more sugar in the liver, which causes you to turn everything in your body to fat. So if you're on a steroid, you're going to have high blood sugar all the time. If you're on a steroid, you're going to have high insulin all the time. If you've got high insulin all the time, your body will not burn fat. It will only store fat. If you've got high insulin all the time, your body is going to have inflammation. Now, wait a second. A steroid's an anti-inflammatory. And yet I just made a claim, and this is just hard science, that it will cause inflammation. You got it. Look at the catch-22. Look at that. Think about what I just said. Let's repeat it. If you're on a steroid, you're going to have high blood sugar. We'll skip the science behind that for the second one. If you're on a steroid, you're going to have high blood sugar. If you've got high blood sugar, you're going to force more insulin into your blood so you can get that sugar out of the blood and into the cell. The amount of insulin that you put into your blood is related to the amount of inflammation through the cytokine that you have in your cells. But that cortisol was ingested as an anti-inflammatory, and yet it's causing inflammation. That's the double whammy of the steroid. For as much as the steroid is touted as an anti-inflammatory, it's causing the very inflammation it was touted to prevent. And in an acute moment, it still works. In the chronic moment, it starts to go into the land of nonsense. So look at the side effects of that steroid then. Number one, you're going to get fat. Number two, or gain weight. Number two, you're going to have just as much inflammation as you had long-term when you started. Number three, that steroid's going to interfere and get in the way of the feedback loop. So it's going to become difficult to go off it once you're on it chronically. Number four, that steroid's going to cause you high blood pressure and water retention. It's because the steroid, okay, works in conjunction with the kidney's ability to decide which minerals you keep and which minerals you take. In the renal tubule of the kidney, you've got decisions being made all the time in that tubule as to should the body absorb and urinate out the sodium or should it keep it in the blood? Should the body absorb the potassium or put it in the blood? Well, when you're on a steroid, what it tells the kidney to do, and this is where we have problems in the kidney and with high blood pressure and water retention, which will start to what? Push towards congestive heart failure. In that kidney, in that renal tubule, the steroid tells the renal tubule to push the sodium back into solution. Instead of urinating your sodium out on the steroid, your renal tubule doesn't pull it out into the urine, it pushes it back into the blood. Once your body is sodium driven, and this is the thing about the steroid, it's sodium driven. The steroid will cause the physiology of the body to be controlled by sodium retention. Sodium retention lyses cells. Sodium retention, if you read the work of Gerson, who cured more cancer than anyone this century, if you read the work of Max Gerson, you'll understand that once the body's cell physiology is driven by sodium retention, it'll force the cell to hold more water to combat that sodium, and it tends to burst the cell. So the side effect of the steroid is not just bloat. It's not just early stage congestive heart failure because you're constantly pushing more water. It's number three. It causes an inflammatory process in the cell. When you have cells that are bursting, you're going to have an alarm signal go off. So look at that cycle then. Here, once again, we have one of the most prevalent, commonly used drugs in the pharmaceutical world, which, again, I'm going to emphasize in the acute stage is a blessing and a lifesaver, but the chronic use of it leads to the same inflammation that you were taking it to prevent. Now, pat yourself on the back if you follow this. And if you haven't and you need to hear it again, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. We've got 67 hours of archived shows now, and they all weave together into each other. And again, if you do this, how can we ask you to understand that a steroid's no good and that you have to activate cerebrally? In your brain, you can understand without this show that a steroid is not good for you. Of course you can. But for you and for your friends, who I hope you're telling, the point is that to get someone to activate that understanding has to go deeper and deeper and deeper. In the healing journey, you watch this with your patients. They have to hit critical mass. They have to hear it and study it and hear it and study it and hear it and study it and continue to work with it just as your doctors do until, boom, you hit that point at which you begin to activate. And you are, right now, just off 30 minutes, closer to understanding why these steroids have to go. Now, this inflammatory process we're talking about, the inflammatory process, I want to remind you, is going on all over your body. On February 23rd, 2004, about 8 years ago, Time Magazine, on its cover article, told us that inflammation is the silent killer. On the cover of Time Magazine, its medical front cover stated, the silent killer. Doctors are now understanding the threats, the chronic inflammatory, et cetera, caused as it relates to disease. You have to understand that this inflammatory process, whether you're on a steroid or not, is constantly stressing the body. The body lives in this dynamic, inflamed state, and it's always controlling its inflammation with the chemicals, the cortisols that your body makes, your homemade remedies, become so important. And again, this ties into the importance of the adrenals, and we don't want to get into that. Although if I did, you would understand that the emphasis would not so much be what to do for your adrenal glands in terms of an herb. It would be to understand the fundamentals behind it. So understand the fundamentals behind inflammation. When your body inhales something, and that particle, whether it's the dirty air of the Long Beach port, or somewhere deep out in Riverside, or anywhere throughout Los Angeles where in the summer the air turns brown, and you can't see the sky sometimes. When you live or work in a state where you're inhaling chemicals, particulates, those chemicals will go down into your lung. But before they get there, your body's going to try to sweep them back up. There's a sweeping mechanism in the bronchioles, the tubes before you get to the lung called the bronchioles, which in asthmatics constrict, thus the asthma attack. These tubes, the bronchioles, are elastic and flexible. And the purpose of that flexibility is to push the particulate matter back up and out so it doesn't get down into your lungs. And it does this with a sweeping mechanism that's sustained by cells in the inside of the bronchial called respiratory columnar cells. They have little cilias on them, little sweeping whiskers. And those little sweeping whiskers are constantly pushing the particulate matter back up and out, sometimes in such size that you end up coughing or you end up expectorating. This is a vital life-saving protective mechanism that we all enjoy and never think about. When we get to the point where those respiratory columnar cells are too stressed, too burdened by the chemicals that the columnar cell are being exposed to, the bad air, the bad water, whatever it might be, when those cells are overloaded, they begin to die. Now, they don't die in mass. They just have little chunks of them broken off. Maybe the cilia break. Maybe the membrane ruptures. Whatever it might be, you think of it like the front door to the house. Some inflammatory stressor came to the front door of the house and just carved a big chunk out of the front. It took a chunk of wood. It didn't break the door. It didn't explode the door. It just banged on the door and broke it. It broke the hinges. When that happens in your bronchioles, immune system cells patrolling see it. And when they see it, it signals. And we don't get into that, but it signals a response that makes leukotrienes, cytokines, adhesion molecules, prostaglandins. There's this whole slew of chemical soup in response to the breakdown of cells due to outside stressors. Now, once inflammation begins, it will signal the constriction of the bronchioles. Once inflammation begins, if it hits a pitch, it will signal constriction of the bronchioles. The body responds to inflammation and goes into panic. It really wants to dilate. It really wants to relax behind this moment. But we evolved in a very positive way in an inflammatory case by constricting an area like a bee sting so that we can sequester and contain the invading alien. But this has a backside to it, and we see this backside with asthma, where the inflammatory response produces chemicals, pain-sensing chemicals, chemicals that bring lots of blood to the area and then tie off the area. And this drives the closing of the bronchioles. Now, your body's trying to kick back on this and do something about it. It's trying to produce enough of its own cortisol, enough of its own anti-inflammatory to open the lung up again. But if there is not a response capable of countering what the stress is in the bronchiole, your body collapses into the asthmatic attack. The etiology, the story of asthma, is in a person that can't mount a response to the stress. Because we're all breathing bad air. Why is it that certain person? What is it there? Rest assured, it's not genetic. Rest assured, you have to look into, number one, their childhood. So let's talk about asthma then for the adult. Let's talk about asthma for the adult that wants to do something about it. You want to get on the other side of your asthma. Are you sympathetic dominant? So the first question is, after we understand your childhood, is, are you sympathetic dominant? See show number 2 on straighttalk.cc. Get to the archive to understand what that word means. But if you live in anxiety, when your body's stressed and your bronchioles want to close, you don't have the connection to the nervous system capable of bringing dilation to those tubes. So your body lives in this duality of constriction and dilation. Asthma is simply high blood pressure of the lungs, of the bronchioles. I'm going to say that again. Asthma is simply high blood pressure of the bronchioles. Because the bronchioles go into vasoconstriction. The bronchioles in the bronchi, in your air sacs, go into vasoconstriction. The arteries go into vasoconstriction and pump up the blood pressure. The failure to dilate under stress, produces asthma and high blood pressure. It produces biliary congestion. It produces irritable bowel syndrome. They're all really talking about the same thing. There's a fundamental concept here for you if you have asthma, food allergies, to understand. And that is, were you brought into the world sympathetic dominant? Somewhere along the line, did you lose? Have you forgotten what it is to dilate the body to truly and deeply relax? And you have to investigate the meaning of that. This is what the American public isn't getting. This is what you're not getting. Even if this makes sense to you, to have and take your education to the physical experience of understanding what it is to shift into a parasympathetic dominant state, out of a sympathetic dominant state, out of the stress state, is the difference between fixing your asthma and living on inhalers for the rest of your life. Next to this, if you're depending on some herb to fix your problem, you're on another planet, because it isn't going to happen. You have to get this. After that, how do we understand asthma? If not a neurologically mediated issue, here's another concept. What is the body's response to inflammation? Well, one of the chemical responses to inflammation in the lung is the production of mucus. The body produces mucus. Your asthmatics are going to have a mucoid or mucus-filled bronchial system. Many of them will. And we all know this. Anytime the lung or the bronchus is chronically inflamed, it produces mucus. You understand this with bronchitis. You understand this with pneumonia. You understand this with your average everyday chest cold. And all of these produce that mucus response. That mucus response is in response to inflammation. There's a bacteria in your lung. It's making, in your bronchi, it's making a poison. The poison isn't well received. The immune system sees the poison or sees the bacteria. This big, big squadron of chaos occurs, and the body in response produces mucus. Well, there is a connection between the mucus in the lung and the mucus in the large intestine. There's a connection between the mucus in the lung and the mucus in the large intestine. When the mucus in the lung overcomes the mucus, when the mucus in the large intestine overcomes or hits a certain threshold, it's as if it spills into the lung. When the inflammatory state, when the ecosystem of bacteria in the large intestine, when the chemical state in the large intestine crosses a certain threshold, it leaks, so to speak, into the lungs. Now, there's not a physical connection, but the two organs are connected energetically. And this is very big for you to understand. Again, why are we treating the lung when we should be treating the large intestine? Why are we trying to understand the lung when we ought to be looking at the large intestine? Why are we treating the lung when we should be understanding the autonomic sympathetic nervous system? Why would we be going after asthma or food allergies, which I hope we can get to today? Why would we be going after them by finding some herb for the lung or some drug for the lung when we ought to be understanding how to shift neurologically, when we need to understand that we have to very often go to the large intestine? And do what in the large intestine? Change the ecosystem. Change the flora in the large intestine. But wait a second. Didn't we understand so much of the asthma produced every day in babies throughout the world as a function of a poorly developed ecosystem in the large intestine? You can bet on that. You can bet on exactly that. We see this from childbirth. But as an adult, we see the development of it. Which is to say, the mucus in the large intestine needs to be drained out. The chemical environment of the large intestine needs to be altered. And cleansing of the large intestine to take out the mucus should be engaged. Are we going to the bathroom regularly? And if not, what are we going to do about it? Have we gone through the colon cleanses? Are we eating mucus-free foods? Foods produce mucus. Your white flours and your sugars and all the things that 67 hours of these shows have been about. I mean, you want me to do it in this show. You want me to get into colon cleansing in detail. You're the kind of person that wants to know what to do. You don't really care about why you're doing it. You just want to know what to do. I have something to say to you that I want to take a moment to say if you're that way. You're kidding yourself. You cannot go about a healing mechanistically. You may get lucky warding off a symptom or two, but if you're one of those people that thinks that understanding deeply in the core of your structure is not related to curing something you've had since childbirth, you drank the Kool-Aid. You're listening to radio talk shows and reading things that are about marketing, not about the reality of cure. So understand that you have to weave a web, and that web begins by getting a comprehensive understanding of what that large intestine is really doing. It's dictating the amount of mucus in every single part of your body. It's dictating the amount of mucus in every single part of your body. which means you're going to have to defecate normally. Look it up. Which means you're going to have to eat, make food choices, meaning in the general sense, cut out the flours and the sugars and the garbage and the junk to bring down the amount of inflammation in the large intestine. The use of fermented foods. The fermented foods will provide the anti-inflammatory chemicals. A bad large intestine is pro-inflammatory, which is why this body puts so much mucus there. And some people are what we call kapha, meaning they're big boned, they're thick. They have a natural tendency to make mucus. Very often, we can't dry these people out until we send them to Arizona. You know, it's interesting, and you'll learn something here. Some people with asthma will go to Arizona, and they'll do wonderfully. And some people with asthma will go to Arizona, and they'll do horribly. And Arizona, New Mexico are classic experiments proving a very fundamental principle in health. And that is that if a person is mucoid, if their tendency, if they're big bone, if they're thick, if they're constantly finding themselves congested, when there's no real reason to be, very often, and again, this takes a little supervision, but very often they're the type of person that just makes more mucus naturally. And when you're like that, if it's spawned itself into an asthma, very often you'll find hot, dry states the cure for your asthma. At the same time, if you're sympathetic dominant and what you call a vata, or someone that's very small boned, someone that can't keep weight on, someone that's very slender, someone that's slight, someone that, well, maybe you wouldn't call them quite as robust, and they suffer from asthma, going to a hot, dry place may be the worst thing, because they're already hot and dry. The constitution of the person, and we're leaning a little bit here, but the constitution of the person is specific to where their asthma will cure. Some people will cure in New Mexico, and some people need to go to the south of the United States and get the humidity. The point is that if you've got an asthma, very often you're going to have to go into the large intestine, whoever you are, and begin to make sure you get good bowel function, to make sure you get the cleanses into there, to make sure you eat foods that will produce less mucus. The use of castor oil produces a hot, drying, decongesting oil into the intestinal tract to break up, again, the mucus plugs. Now, the use of herbs for asthma, pick them, all right? Everything from eucalyptus to peppermint oil to licorice to ginkgo to coltsfoot to parsley to ginger to hyssop. I mean, the list can go on and on and on. And these things will help. They will not cure. I never see it cure. The use of air filters. Which air filter should I buy? Buy a good one. Buy a HEPA. Buy an EcoQuest. They're all fantastic. And we can split hairs all day about which one is better, but that's not the point. The point is understand that there is something called indoor air pollution. And I don't think I'm telling you anything new about herbs and air filters to reduce asthma. But here's something you got to understand. And this is novel. If we were really honest with ourselves, we'd probably shut down the entire city of Long Beach or Torrance. We have pockets all over the United States. Well, we cannot understand this as Americans when we look to China. Anyone that's been on the mainland of China thinks that the way, unfortunately, those people are living is nothing short of insane. The air pollution in your cities like Beijing is 1,000 times worse than Los Angeles. Even Mexico City on a bad day makes Los Angeles look like the air is clean like it was 100 years ago. And I say this because you have to understand that if you're suffering with an inhaler and you've been on a steroid for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you've gotten to the point where by the time you're 60, you're going to get sick. Sick in a deeper way from some of the side effects of the steroids. You might be thinking about moving. Do you know that in certain levels of medicine, there's only two questions you're asked? Where do you live and how do you think? I'm going to repeat that. That's how big it is. Welcome to this show. This show is about these types of statements. These statements are heavy. They go deep. They're what the American public is really missing more and more and more. And we are getting sicker and sicker and sicker. Everyone agrees with that. But if we stay on this herbal pharmaceutical mentality, we're going to go nowhere. I assure you that. I assure you the statistics support that. So get the beauty of the deeper level. There's two questions. How do you think and where do you live? On certain levels of medicine, if you live in the wrong place, if you live in a place you don't like, or you live in a place that's not right for you, the only answer is to move. And for as much as that may not be viable today, it may be viable in 5 years. Or it may be viable today. Or it may be mandatory today. So understand that what we've developed in this chemical suit we call the air in the industrial city is something that you can't effectively fix with an herb or with a drug or with an air filter or whatever you're trying. So if you're not getting response and you're trying, give yourself a break. This is a message of enthusiasm here. It's a good thing for you to know, in a sense, that if you're struggling with things like this, if you're like Leah at 4 years old on liquid steroids, and no doubt this little girl will try everything over the next 20 years of her life to get off these things, understand there is a voice of hope in that we might just have to admit she's living in the wrong city. Next. Next is breath. And I'm going to segue the end of this show into the beginning of the show next week we're going to do on breath. Everybody talks about breath in the healing arts. In the healing arts, it doesn't matter what you do, yoga, Pilates, gymnastics, any type of sports training. People talk about breath. Breath has a very real meaning. Breath is an exercise. If you understand it, if you study it, it simply isn't like Bernard Jensen or Jack LaLanne said it was, where you just take that deep breath and push the air out. I'm sorry, this is kind of nonsense. Breath is, if you learn the art of it, a process through which you will shift your body into a dilated state. Breath is something that an asthmatic must learn, because its version of breath via its nervous system forces that into constriction. And there are exercises, but they require understanding, that can take that breath into the vasodilatory response. So let's look at this now. Let's look at 56 minutes of education. And let's understand that if you're an asthmatic, if you're suffering for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you got to go to the birth. You got to go to trauma in the birth. You got to go to did you come down the vaginal canal. You got to go to the breastfeeding. Then you have to go to whether you're sympathetic dominant or not. And if you are sympathetic dominant, how do you get out of it? That's next week's show when we get into the breath. Next week we're going to do 60 minutes on how to bring yourself out of sympathetic dominance. But if you're thick and heavy and mucoid, if you don't defecate once or twice a day, if you bloat after meals, if you know your intestinal tract is filled with mucus, understand that your lungs are going to be filled with mucus. And if you're living in a place where the air is filled with antigens or stressors to the bronchioles, and those stressors go into a place in your lung that's already filled with mucus, you're setting that bronchiole up for an explosion. And if you're slightly sympathetic dominant, if your body doesn't know how to respond to stress, it won't relax behind the attack. It'll constrict behind the attack. And there you have it, in a nutshell, the asthmatic. Now, what this has to do with your favorite herb for asthma, or what this has to do with your favorite pharmaceutical, is beyond me. I leave you today with the unabiding conviction that if you'll give yourself the education, you'll come up with the answers. But you got to get off that age-old mentality of fix me, cure me with the miracle pill. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Next week, we'll hit breath. God bless.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.